All right, good evening. Once again, my name is Toby and I'm an alcoholic. In the course of this meeting, you know, I get to meet a lot of people, talking to them before or after a meeting, and this happened not too long ago where I had the ability to speak with this young lady, and I found what she had to say was really kind of interesting and seemed like it was hopeful, which is what we do here. We try and spread hope that there is a solution to this problem. It's a little different tonight. This is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but we all talk about recovery. Cross addiction is very rampant among our groups, and there are other sister groups that are formed from ours. And I believe, am I correct, that you went through the NA steps? Yes. So we have a kind of a special speaker meeting tonight. We get to hear a little bit about one of our sister associations, and I'm sure that the message is recovery. With that, I give you Marina.
Thanks. I'm Marina. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Marina.
I wish I had a stool. I kind of want to sit down. So I guess I'll start at the beginning. I was born in San Jose, Costa Rica, as well as my older sister, and we have a younger brother who was born 4 years after me in the Dominican Republic. So if you don't get it yet, we moved around a lot when we were really little. We ended up living in New York until I was about the age of 12, and then we moved to Tampa, Florida, which is where I live now, still, or again. But I grew up in a happy, healthy, upper middle class home. My parents have been married for like 30 years or something. You know, they both own their own businesses, and you know, they're great people. If you guys have ever met my family, you know that they're freaking awesome. And so like growing up, man, it was like I was surrounded by so much normal, you know, so much like typical healthy family stuff that, you know, it was strange to think that I felt different. And I wasn't really sure what was different about me, but I knew that something was missing. Like, I knew that there was this void inside of me that I just had to fill. And I tried so many things to try and fill this void, man. It was just like this huge gaping hole inside of me that just never went away. And, you know, I would try to dress differently or cut my hair really short or hang out with guys. And, like, I started cutting myself at a really young age. And then, you know, once we moved to Florida, it wasn't such, we didn't live in the city in New York. We lived in like a smaller town outside of the city. So there wasn't too many like shenanigans happening in this small town because it was really easy to get caught. But once once we moved to Florida, it was like, this is a bigger city. There are kids getting into stuff that I was so attracted to, man. Like, and I'm not sure if it was the fact that like I had ever seen drinking or using drugs or sex or any of that stuff glamorized, because I didn't. It was just that it was so mysterious, and I knew that this was something I hadn't tried yet to fill that void. And like, I was all up for trying new stuff, man. Like, whatever it was, like, if it would fix me, I was willing to try it. So I started drinking when I was 12, and I couldn't, even like my first time, it wasn't just like, oh sure, I'll have a beer. No, it was like, sure, I'll drink this whole bottle and not be able to walk home. And that was a pattern that continued throughout my life. There was never, I don't know, I kind of tend to do things like 100% no matter what it is. And I ended up running away from home when I was about 14. I ran away a lot, like in little spurts. Like, I would run down the street to a friend's house, or, you know, I'd run away for a week and like get caught or get arrested and go to juvie and be sent home with my folks or something. But when I was 14, I decided to run away from Florida to California, and I spent some time out there. And that was the first time I got to experience like homelessness, which was something new and exciting at the time because I was 14 and I was like, no rules, this is awesome. It wasn't quite so awesome as I thought. It was lonely a lot of the times. It was scary a lot of the times. I met some people that were really a lot further on in their disease, if we should say. And, you know, like, things happen out there that you know, like 14-year-old girls shouldn't really be involved in. But there I was, man, like still seeking that filler, you know, that something outside of myself that'll make me feel whole. And I stayed out in California for maybe like 8 months, which felt like forever when I was 14. And I ended up going back to New York. And when I was in New York, I was walking down the street one night alone, just kind of dazed out after a nice run. And some guy pulled up and was like, "Hey, want to make some money?" And I was like, "Yeah, because I could really use another drink." So I learned how to sell myself when I was 15 in New York. And I remember feeling like I had gotten away with something. I remember feeling empowered. And I remember feeling like I was in control and I really got over on this dude. Like, just pay me a bunch of money for something I've been doing anyways, like for free. So I figured in my head that this was something I could run with. And I did. And that's a pattern that also continued throughout my disease, my whole active disease era, I guess you could call it. I ended up back in Florida. I traveled around a little bit more. I spent a lot of time in jails and institutions and even some time in a nursing home. I got really sick once, and that was a pretty scary experience. I was 23, and it was right after my 23rd birthday. And I was just so worn out. Like, all these years of drinking and drugging and tricking and being homeless and being sick and being tired and being alone and being miserable and still not being able to fill this fucking void that I had. Like things would fill it at first and then they wouldn't fill it anymore when I continued doing them. So, like, I had to switch it up a lot and it just... just keep going, man, and just keep going and trying to get that feeling of being okay. Because I knew I wasn't okay. I knew, like, logically, like, I'm not a dumb girl. I know, like, something is not right here. Like, I come from a good family, and, like, I'm smart, and I'm pretty, and, like, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be feeling this way that I feel, which was empty and lost and alone and miserable and desperate. Like, that's not the way I wanted to feel anymore, and... so I ended up going to a detox facility where I spent 12 days of misery. And while I was there, hospitals and institutions brought some meetings in. And that was the first time that I was able to put a word to the feeling that I had when I was in that detox. And like I had been through multiple places before and you know, like nothing had ever worked, and I wasn't really sure if it was going to work this time, but I knew that something felt different inside of me. Like, that void wasn't filled, but there was a feeling in there. It was like this warm, glowing ray of light, you know, and I didn't know how to describe that yet. And what you guys told me was that was hope. And it was like the most beautiful, overwhelming thing that I had felt in a really, really, really long time, and I freaking liked it. Like, it was awesome. And so I was really happy to have that. But that was about all I had. Like, family wouldn't really talk to me. I had the clothes on my back that were starting to not fit me anymore because I gained a little bit of weight. If I don't know if anyone can relate to that. But so I ended up actually in these pajama pants that some guy had given me, like, on my last... I was actually walking home from my last run, trying to get to my parents' house, and this guy picked me up, and I feel like I have to tell this little story because it was really one of the first moments that I knew was what we call, like, a God moment, you know, and plenty of guys had picked me up before. I'd gotten in plenty of cars before, but never once has any of them said, "You look exhausted. Do you need a place to sleep tonight? Are you hungry? Would you like to come to my house and take a shower alone?" You know, like, this was totally different. And so I did. Like, he gave me pajamas to wear, and I was really, really out of it. So I had them on backwards. So, like, the little man flap was, like, over here. And I walked around for, like, 3 days like that. If that gives you any, like, idea how, you know, low the physical aspect of my disease took me. But so I ended up in those pajama pants and detox, and I had the hope, and I knew from what you guys were telling me that when I got out of detox, I had to go to meetings. I had to go to meetings. I had to go to meetings. And I kept hearing, like, you got to get to a meeting. Like, that's a safe place. You need to go there. Like, so I ended up getting out of detox, and my parents were like, we're not really ready to have you in our house yet, so you're going to have to find somewhere else to stay. So, of course, I went and stayed with some guy I met in detox. Like, freaking awesome idea. And he happened to live in the middle of the ghetto. And as I was, there was, thank God, there was a meeting place. Like, there was actually an AA clubhouse right down the street from there. But I had to walk through, like, this really horrible neighborhood to get there. And on the day I got out of detox, I got to this guy's house, and it was, like, almost time for the meeting. So I'm hauling ass through the ghetto. And I have, like, you know, that random guy who's like, psst, you straight? You good? You need anything? And I literally told this guy on my way back, when I walk back through here, hit me up. We'll go get a drink or something. And I got to the meeting place, and I sat through a meeting, and I picked up my white chip, and there was this guy at the meeting who's in this room, who's actually engaged to my sponsor, who decided to take it upon himself to give me a ride home from that meeting. And I didn't have to walk back through that ghetto, and I didn't have to go see that guy, you know, and that's another one of those things that just, you know, makes me wonder, you know, it's not really a coincidence. So, like, when I got to, like, my second and third step, I was like, oh, that's what those times were. That's what a higher power does, which is awesome. So I got straight out there in Clearwater, and I ended up living with some guy who's in the rooms, of course, surprise. Like, there's a pattern here, if you hadn't noticed. And he was actually a really nice guy. He had, like, an extra bedroom, and he gave me a job and, like, fed me and let me sleep there and took me to meetings every day. And, you know, it was all fine and dandy for about, like, 60 days. And then all of a sudden it was like, I need something in exchange for you living here. And for the first time in my life, I said no to a man. Not really sure why at the time. I was just like, no, like, I don't want to. I don't feel like that's going to give me anything that I need, and I don't feel like you should have to ask that from me. And I didn't feel like it was right, and I didn't do it. And that taught me how to, A, set some boundaries with men, which, let me tell you, has been an amazing tool in the program and in life in general. And it taught me that I was worth something. You know, it taught me that, like, I'm not just a body, and I'm not something for sale. Like, I'm a human, and I have feelings, and I have emotions, and I'm better than that today. Like, I don't have to act like that to get approval from you, because I don't need your approval, dude. Freaking weirdo. So, I ended up coming home to my parents' house for Thanksgiving and never left. They weren't really sure how that happened, but I ended up kind of just, like, not leaving at all. I kind of brought all my stuff with me for Thanksgiving and ended up staying there. But, you know, it was cold out, and my mom let me borrow her car. And that alone was, like, a huge thing. The fact that somebody trusted me enough to take their vehicle. And so she let me drive her car to a meeting, and she had, like, one CD in the CD player. And so, like, every time I hear that CD now, it's actually in my car now because I love it now. It's not even the greatest CD ever, but when I hear it, it connects me back with that feeling of, like, I'm doing something good with my life, and like, people are trusting me again, and I'm, like, emerging out of this, you know, like, dirt, and I'm starting to grow into a human again, like a person that people like and care about. And so that was an amazing moment also. But so I got clean, I had like 90 days, and my mom suggested that I go to the doctor, which was a really foreign concept because I hadn't been to a doctor since, like, a pediatrician. So I ended up going, and I found out that I had hepatitis C, and in fact, like I said, I like to do everything 100%, so I had two kinds of hepatitis C, and I got with a doctor, and we started talking about treatment options, and if anybody knows anything about that, they were not very pretty options to take. But So there was a lot of like preparation for this medical treatment. Like I had to get a liver biopsy and I had to get an ultrasound on my heart and I had to like get a letter from my sponsor and I had to get like medical, like mental checkup stuff going on just to, like, to make sure I was stable enough to get on this medicine that was apparently really, really intense. And so in the meantime, I started going to HCC, and I actually just graduated from HCC with honors because I learned how to the program in other areas of my life. But so my doctor wanted to wait till I had at least a year sober before we started the treatment, which thank God now looking back that we did that. But it ended up taking a little bit longer than that. I didn't start my treatment until right after I picked up my 2 years is when I started interferon. And like I have to sidetrack here a little bit and say like thank God for sponsorship and thank God for the steps because like getting clean, man, like I said, all I had was that little bit of hope, man. And a sponsor is what taught me how to take that little bit of hope and put it into action and like sit down and write and really look at the unmanageability that was caused in my life by, you know, my disease and to really learn how to trust and rely on a higher power, which has been just ridiculously instrumental in everything I do, you know, and to, you know, do the house cleaning, man. Like, I had a lot of shit piled up in there that I was not really willing to look at. And, like, you know, like, getting to a fifth step, I wasn't so really worried about, like, what my sponsor was going to think about me. It was like, what am I going to reveal to myself that I'm not willing to look at yet, you know? And I don't know, man, like, people were like, just sit down and pray and then write. Just write it out and, you know, like, more will be revealed and you're only going to get what you can handle. And, like, that's what happened for me. And, you know, I was able to go over some of the things that had happened and, you know, make peace with that. That's a beautiful thing, you know, to have peace with my past because, like, I don't have the freaking prettiest past. It's actually not really pretty at all. But the fact that I'm okay with it and that I can stand up here and talk about it and not be ashamed of it anymore is something that I find really beautiful. And that's something that this program has given me. You know, I got to make amends to people, which was really, really awesome. My brother and I sat and cried for like 20 minutes. It's a lot of hugging and snot involved, and it was kind of gross, but it was a beautiful moment to like, you know, to know that not only was I able to say the words that like I acknowledge my part in this and I'm gonna try to never do this stuff again, but to actually stick to that and have my actions show that I'm changing and that I'm a different person now, and for them to see that, you know, and to understand that it's okay to love me now. You know, it's okay for me to love you now. And that's, you know, something I couldn't do before, man. I was so distant and isolated. Like, I was so busy trying to fill this freaking void, man. Like, I ignored them. Like, I wasn't there for a lot of stuff with my family. And so to be there today for stuff like that is it's a real gift. So, anyways, back to where I'm 2 years clean and I started interferon. And you know, I had heard a lot of stories of older gentlemen who had had hepatitis for a lot longer than I did, and they were like, it's the worst stuff ever, you don't want to do it, you're going to be in the hospital, and it's going to be so bad. And, you know, I thought, oh, well, I'm young, I'm healthy, like, it's cool, I got this. And it wasn't so fun. I have to say those older men were right. And it was really not a pleasant experience at all. The fact that I had to inject something alone was really a mental block for me. But, you know, I had to reassociate that with the fact that this is medicine and this is what needles are supposed to be used for, so maybe I should try this out. It was big. It was a really hard time, man. I felt really horrible. And I really wish that I had the words to, like, to get across how dark of a place I was in, sober. Like, not drinking, not using. I may have overshopped a little bit. I may have overeaten a little bit, but I didn't drink, you know? And that was the miracle for me, was that I was in such a dark, like, deep depression. Like, I really don't have enough words to describe how horrible this place was. But the fact that I could apply the steps and the spiritual principles to this situation and make it through that to the other side. I finished interferon like 2 weeks before I picked up my 3 years, and it was just so miserable. Like, even though like this was a great day and I was celebrating that I had made it to this milestone, I still felt so horrible inside. And it's not because I wasn't doing the work, it was just side effects, you know, of something. But like, that's, it was an amends to myself that I had to make. You know, we have a friend now who's actually in hospice care. They're flying his family in because he's dying of it. You know, and to watch other people go through that and know that I don't have to die that way is beautiful. And I'm like forever grateful for the fact that I was able to lean on the people around me to help me through that dark time and know that like I've attained like sustained viral response and like I don't have hepatitis anymore. It's a freaking beautiful thing. And, you know, like, and I've noticed that it's kind of inspired some other people to go through it and to get through it and not drink over it is a really beautiful thing, man. And, you know, it's probably one of my favorite things is being able to watch somebody else get it, to see that hope grow in somebody else and to watch, like, the spark come back into their eyes and, like, see them do the work and see them stay, you know, and see them grow, like, it's one of the most beautiful things ever, man. And, you know, it's such a gift to not only have an amazing sponsor to help me with this process, but to be able to sponsor other women. Like, it's one of my favorite things ever, ever. Like, I was really sick. I'm still really sick. I don't know if I sound sick, but I really feel sick still. And I actually had to cancel step work with a sponsee earlier this week, which is the first time I've ever done that. That's how sick I am. But, like, it's just, it's a beauty. It's a beauty that I don't see anywhere else in the world other than in these rooms, man. Like, just to know that, like, we made it, that I made it to a place where, like, my higher powers saw fit for me to go and to be given the opportunity to live a life that is so full and so beautiful and so peaceful. Like, I don't have to run around trying to fill that void anymore. Like, the void is full, you know, and for the most part, it pretty much stays full. There are days, you know, there may even be a week or two where it's not full, but it's because I'm not doing something. It has nothing to do with my God being, like, faulty on any part. You know, it's me and my connection to my higher power and being able to help others. And, you know, it's just the most beautiful and amazing thing that I've ever felt, man. Like, I am forever grateful that, like, I get to be a daughter today. I get to be a friend to someone. You know, I get to be a girlfriend to someone. That's an amazing thing. You know, my relationship with men had always been really sketchy. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing that my higher power can place people in my life who need to be there at that exact moment and can influence my life in such ways that just make it blossom and grow. People are amazing, you know, and my higher power is amazing. And I am just so, so grateful to be here and share this with you guys. So thanks for having me.
Marina Ape.